Welcome, everyone. This is the LaRouche Show for Saturday, May 25, 2013. My name's Marcia Mary Baker, and we today are pre-taping the show because of the time zone factor and scheduling, because we are very glad to have guests from Australia, whom I will introduce in a few seconds. So we're pre-taping May 23rd, 2013. None of what our guests will be talking about will be dated because they are involved in Australia and internationally in making a call on for nation states to take emergency action on the need for nation-serving banking, instituting Glass-Steagall, especially in the United States. They're reaching across the Pacific, and the associated necessary physical economic projects for every continent and credit to bring those about for mutual interest development on this planet. So with that, what I'd like to do is introduce them. Then I have a few announcements. But we're very glad to have three people from the Citizens Electoral Council of Australia, which is part of the world effort associated, working closely with Lyndon LaRouche and associates elsewhere. And it's based in Melbourne. But first, I'd like to welcome from way across the continent nation of Australia, inland from Perth, is Jean Robinson in Western Australia. Welcome, Jean. And I hope I think she's well connected. But Jean,
hello, Marcia. Yeah, nice to be talking to you.
Good. And Jean, you are the Western Australia. I think you're the state secretary for the Citizens Electoral Council in Western Australia. And we particularly want Jean. Very keen to have Jean on, who is in the wheat belt, one of the world's wheat belts in Western Australia, and is running for federal office there, which we'll hear more about, and I believe the elections are in September. But from Melbourne, we're very glad to have Craig Isherwood and Nolene Isherwood. Craig is the Craig, you're the general secretary of the CEC, right?
National secretary, Marsha. Yeah.
And Nolene, I know you're the executive member of the CEC, but also very much involved in rural news and policy in Australia.
Yes. Hello, Marcia. Good to be on.
Okay, and we'll say right now, and you can mention it later, I might have already said, this is the 25th anniversary of the effort that the two of you were instrumental in working with associates in founding way back when. I remember the time, 25 years, right?
Yes, 25 years this year. It's 1988 when we started the political party, and that seems time's sort of gone very fast, Marcia. I mean, wasn't until 1991 that we actually met up with Mr. LaRouche, but we've been part of the international LaRouche movement since 1991, in effect, and full-time in Melbourne since 1992. So we've built a movement right across the country, and, of course, Jean's our state secretary in Western Australia, so we've got the whole place covered.
Now, I'll repeat again what prompted us in particular to have Jean Robinson and our friends, the Isherwoods, on is that we have a world food calamity unfolding. And Australia, like portions of North America and certain other parts of Eurasia and Europe, have been the production zones in a world annual level of production, which has been below what's needed. You have a debacle in Africa. You have a situation of great production in the Americas in the sense of Argentina and Brazil, but it's being used by cartels internationally. And Jean Robinson in Western Australia is speaking out on this, and as I said, from the wheat belt, because we've kind of reached the end stage of supportability and livability on the earth, not because we've run out of resources or water or anything else that's usually being you get those lies about that, but that we've had a policy of delimitation of that, and we'll be talking about that because it stems right from what's best called the British Empire, that wants the depopulation and the on the scale of genocide. So unless we deliberately throw off this kind of outlook and the practices that go with it, we're dead ducks. And so the particulars of what's going on in Australia and agriculture is a world issue. Australia is one of the bread baskets, as well as other good things to eat. And it runs very parallel to the particulars may be different. What's happening here in North America, in the western states, where it's very dry, and in Mexico. And we'll get into that a bit in discussing the world wheat situation, perhaps, or other things. But our wheat belt here, Gene, is burning up. That's what's happening. The state of Kansas, which borders on Oklahoma, where people may have seen headlines of this ferocious tornado storm that went through a few days ago. The state of Kansas alone produces over 20% of all the U.S. hard red bread wheat, the winter wheat, maybe 25%. And if you add in Oklahoma and Texas, the three states produce up to 35 or more percent of this kind of bread wheat. And it's not happening. It's dry. It's been that way. And there's no need for it because if we had built the North American water and power lines beginning 50 years ago. So the only reason I go into this is we have a terrific mobilization to change the direction in Washington, D.C., and get the banking and credit systems that belong to a sovereign nation in the United States reinstated through Glass-Steagall, and cut out the bloodsucker Wall Street types and initiate doing what's necessary to build up the resource base, give credit to agriculture, and assure such basics as food, water, and sanitation. Now, so I just threw in the United States because I just want to point out to some of, especially our regular listeners, this is an important United States national commemoration weekend, Memorial Day coming, that is the 27th is a Monday, the 26th in May. And it's a serious commemoration weekend, but we are in a very serious crisis. And our regular listeners will know that the Senate and the House of the Congress in Washington, the members are going fanning out this weekend for about a week. They'll be in their home districts or elsewhere. Some of them might be in hiding. But we have quite a situation with the Singular Act that happened May 16th when Senator Tom Harkin from the state of Iowa did introduce a bill in the Senate to restore the Glass-Steagall Act. So this is in parallel with the one in the House. And it's not a question of just incrementally pressuring your senator, although do it for sure. But we're in a potential breakout situation, even though the danger is very great and the danger of war is very great, which is associated. So anyone listening in the United States, prepare thyself and go wild. Now is the time. We have special opportunities, as I just mentioned, about this act of Senator Harkin. But it's going to take everything we can do. So while Congress is in this Memorial Day weekend and week recess, go for the maximum push. But with that, I'd like to then go through down across the Pacific and into, again, picture Gene Robinson in Western Australia. That state is gigantic. And I said you were inland from Perth. But do you want to start out by describing the situation you've got there on your hands with the actual physical condition, the crop, its importance, and the crisis with credit? Anything you want to say, a situation report.
Yes, Marcia, you're exactly right in saying that this is a fundamental crisis for humanity because what we're seeing happening is the attack on Australia by the Queen of England and the associated British Empire, because we've seen a crisis in agriculture for a long time developing with the continuous policies of free trade and deregulation, to the point now that the only industry that's actually left in WA, and of course is very important for the world because we only have a mere 4,300 wheat farmers left, and they produce anything from about 8 to 15 million tonnes of grain a year, depending on the season. And like you just explained in the United States, because there has been no substantial water development, the farmers are very vulnerable to the weather conditions, because we haven't built the projects to waterproof the state, like similar type Nawapa ideas, which have been on the drawing board for 50, 60, 70 years. So the wheat farmers in Australia are probably the best and the most efficient dryland farmers in the world for what they actually produce. But the accumulation of many years of these policies has now seen, and also the deliberate attempt now that you see where the politicians and the banks are actually, the politicians aren't doing anything, and they can actually fix the problem immediately by having a debt moratorium or a moratorium on farm foreclosures and creating credit for carry-on finance for the farmers, because at the moment, we're sitting at about 30% of farmers haven't received carry-on finance. Banks are basically forcing 50% of farmers to sell off assets. Another 35% have been requested that they put their farms on the market because they're not receiving any finance. So what you have is this total collapse going on in a fair area of the state, and it's not been addressed at all. And this is in creating serious problems for all the communities, because as soon as you have a collapse in agriculture, of course, as you would know, you have a collapse in all the communities and takedown of all the services, to the point that, you know, most children haven't got hardly anywhere to go to school. So this is a very serious problem, and we're doing whatever we can to try and get our farmers to actually realise that they are being lied to, because unfortunately the method that's been used has been used for a long time, because I can personally remember going to the first crisis meeting in farming in 1992, which is actually the pig industry, which of course we were part of. And the same thing happened. You have crisis meetings and all the politicians come along and everybody's going to do something, but the reality is nothing ever gets done, because that's actually the intention, to carry on these policies. So now, yeah, in WA, you've got only the wheat industry left, and of course the other industry that's also under attack, which has also been orchestrated by the particularly by the media and also the green movement, which of course is the work of Prince Philip, is the takedown of the live export industries. And that's also a result of these free trade policies, where, you know, for 30, 40 years farmers have been told that you don't have to worry about the domestic market anymore because we can export. And I always remember it was, which I actually read in EIR a long time ago, it was very funny, because when we were involved in the pig industry, we were told that, you know, don't worry about the threat of imports coming into Australia, which were coming in from Canada. You know, we only didn't matter because we could export all our pork to China. Uh-huh. And I remember reading an article in which was written by you, actually, in EIR, saying that the biggest exporter of pig meat in the world at the time was China. So yeah, we were being lied to. That's why we got out of the industry. But yeah, so basically it's a tragedy, but unfortunately this, as EIR and LaRouche has been saying, this is this deliberate attempt by the British Queen in particular into reducing the world's population. And it's very ironic that most of Western Australia has now been locked up under the green policies. You know, all the stations have been either made into national parks or bought up by Rio Tinto, actually, which is, of course, the Queen's Mining Company. So
the actual land area
is the situation we face at the moment.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's dire. And the other thing is, when you said that the policy, the politicians are just, if they're doing anything, they're grandstanding because they're not doing anything. And there is this policy to try and induce for peanuts that farmers should quit. Is what you issued a media statement on that, right?
Yes, that's correct. It's Yeah, it's a real insult, actually, because, yeah, they're offering farmers $20,000 to leave their farm. And in actual fact, no farmer has applied for that so far. And there's been the state government's offering $25,000 to farmers for carry-on farming, which is ridiculous because most have to borrow anywhere between $1 and $4 million to put their crops in. So, and only four farmers have applied for that. So you can just see that it's just ridiculous beyond belief. And of course, you know, because the politicians they're dedicated to the free market. So therefore, you can't interfere with, you know, the market. And of course, so, you know, you've got this cost price squeeze where we've seen the hyperinflation in all the costs, input costs of everything. And then, and because now we have virtually complete control of the prices by the major grain cartels, you know, the wheat board, the Australian wheat board, was privatised, as you know, and sold off just like the Canadian one has been. So that means companies like Cargill's and Archer Daniel Midland have got tremendous control over the markets now, and Bunge's actually building a massive, great, big grain terminal in one of our major ports over here as well. So the only institution that's left is the CBH, which is a farmers' cooperative, which, of course, is the other push is for the privatisation, a sell-off of that, which, of course, would mean it's basically a bailout for the banks, because this institution, which has been going for 80 years, which is responsible for the logistics of moving and storing grain and also marketing it, is worth between $4 and $6 billion. So, you know, by forcing the privatisation of that, that will in fact actually all end up in the hands of the banks. And as we know, that's because of the bankruptcy of the banks. They're reducing the credit to the farmers because they're using it for speculation. So we've got this total bankruptcy, which has been playing out now in the final stages, really, if you look at it like that. And we're going to be, you know, like Linda Roche always said, you know, if anybody supports free trade, they're actually supporting mass murder. And unfortunately, that's where we're headed.
Right. Well, let's come back to that. But I understand then you have parallel situations with the animal live export industry. And that would be goats or beef cattle. You have your produce production. Nolene, you have an overview on that.
Yes, Marcia. It's what Jean's just described as the situation facing our wheat growers is repeated all across the country in virtually every farming community and every industry. I think perhaps the most egregious of those outside of Western Australia is the beef industry, and that is our second largest export, farming export market, and it's been devastated over the last couple of years. In particular, there were moves several years ago to highlight cruelty to animals, and in particular the export trade of live beef to Indonesia. And as a result of that, the green groups and the animal liberation groups put pressure on the government to ban the live trade. And as a result of that, we're now in a situation where there's over 4.2 million excess head of cattle in the northern part of Australia that have no market to go to. And all of those northern regions have been hit with drought over the last 2 years. So with no market and no food left, and these are enormous, you know, they measure land in the northern part of Australia by, you know, so many million square kilometres. So you can't just go and put a bale of hay out and hope that that's going to feed your stock. So it's impossible. And so a lot of that, those cattle are being dumped onto the domestic market. All of our meatworks and sale yards are choked and booked out till much later in the year, you know, September, October this year. There's no vacancies, no scope. So many farmers are being forced to shoot their stock in the paddock. There has been a move just in the last week or so by the Queensland government to open up national parks. These are conservation regions that used to be operated as grazing properties but have been locked up by the environmentalist movement. And the Queensland government, under emergency conditions, have agreed to allow grazing in those areas. However, the federal government has tried to overrule their right to do that. So there's quite a showdown between the green environmentalist circles and our food producers. There's similar crisis looming in many other industries as well. The dairy industry has been hard hit. We have a fruit growing orchardists in the southern part of Australia who have had contracts cancelled to one of the biggest canneries, fruit canneries in the country. And in each case, you know, we have farmers who are almost on their knees begging and pleading the government for some kind of emergency aid and intervention. And in every single case, Marcia, they're being told, basically, look, sorry, this is the free market. If you can't pay your debts, if you can't remain viable under these circumstances, then you shouldn't be in business. So it's this ruthless backing away by government under exceptional circumstances that's leaving all of our farmers, pretty much every industry in the country, in a total disaster. And that's not just a disaster for Australia, but it's a huge tragedy for the whole world that depends on our food exports. So it's very, very serious across the board.
Right. And what you say about the cannery or the packing house, the freezing facility or anything being booked or not being prepared to contract to buy the produce that an orchard or field production of fruit or vegetables was producing, we're finding this arbitrary, radical free market kind of thing will take the United States back to dairy and beef, as you said. Cargill shut a huge beef processing plant in Western Australia, or Western Texas, with 2 weeks' notice. The company in the United States that monopolizes 30% of all the fluid milk beverage, fresh milk, they arbitrarily are now closing many of their 79. We used to call them bottling plants, milk processing plants around the country, including Buena Vista, California, and so forth. So again, you're saying that you have the farmers are stuck and the orchardists it's just like having to shoot your cattle. You can't produce anything for the season.
Marcia, in southern Victoria, where this particular cannery, it's called SPC Ardmona, that's the name of it, it's actually owned by Coca-Cola Amatil. And they've halved the contracts to all of their local growers, so the peach and pear producers. And what that means is that there's millions of fruit trees that are going to be bulldozed, you know, just removed from production because there's no contracts, there's no demand for it. Meanwhile, that cannery is sourcing a lot of produce from Asia, China, and places like that. So they can bring it in at a fraction of the cost and sacrifice the growers literally that live on their doorstep. in order to reduce their production costs. And that's the free market at work. I mean, and probably within a very short period of time, they will move that processing plant into Asia, like most others have been as well. So it's the story. We hear it in every industry. We hear it from every country. But this is the British system of free trade. That's how it's designed to work. And at the end of the day, it's total devastation for local communities and production. And I just wanted to add one thing, because I've only just discovered this overnight, that our government here, our federal government, has been working for some time on a national food plan, which is they promote this as looking at all the various issues that must be addressed in order to guarantee a reliable food supply for the country, food security.
Okay.
But their recommendations are shocking, truly shocking. In their great national food plan, they're going to provide funding to improve farmers' competitiveness so that they can expand into new markets. That means compete with China. And they're going to make small grants of $10,000 to $25,000 available to small community farmers, community gardens, farmers' markets, the like. So this is the way they're going to secure our food supply, is by promoting this cottage industry, local, grow your veggies in your backyard, which is all very nice if you've got a backyard, but it doesn't feed the world. And this is what we've come to expect from the government. It's pathetic.
Yes, I'm sad to say it sounds very familiar here. About 2 years ago, Prince Charles came to Washington, D.C., to Georgetown University, and gave a speech called The Future of Food. And this has been turned into a book, and this is the Michelle Obama White House kind of policy, that there should be community gardens, gardens everywhere, eat local. It's this royalist, let them eat cake. And I'm afraid to say, you go on the U.S. Department of Agriculture website under the Obama administration, and this is the major thrust. Instead of emergency action in terms of the drought situation out in Kansas or Texas or portions of California Central Valley, you have grants and discussion of how to have farmers' markets. 6,000 new farmers' markets have been created in the United States, while meantime we have a starvation vector that's really gaining momentum. So I didn't mean to go into that, but I'm afraid it sounds very familiar, and it certainly goes hand in hand with what Jean was bringing out right at the beginning, because it's not even a pretense, it's a mockery. Jean, I wanted to ask you before, there are many things we could go into, but your campaign, you're running for office, and do you want to say something about that and elaborate more on the, you put out some of the emergency measures that should be taken directly for agriculture. And I want to tell people, Jean's ads, I heard your radio ads you've started. We can give people the website. I'll do it now and then please repeat it again. That is, it's cecaust.com.au, right?
Yes, that's right.
Correct.
So, Jean.
Yes, Marsha, I'm actually standing for the federal seat of O'Connor, which is actually massive. It's 920,000 square kilometres. So it takes in about a third of the state. And that's what this is, the process we also see happening is a depopulation of our nation in the regional areas to the cities because of the collapse. So, so we've embarked on doing some as part of my campaign, because this is a very good way of reaching people, and it's an emergency. We need people to act now to stop this collapse. So we've embarked on doing some radio ads, and we only have one commercial radio station that covers the entirety of that area, which is made up of 10, company, Radio West, which is actually, I think it's actually owned by the Macquarie Group, but yeah, so there's 12 different radio stations covering this area, and we're playing these ads for the next 2 weeks. And they're based on the call for the Glass-Steagall, of course, and the fact that, you know, governments can save banks, but they can't save anybody else. So we're saying that they can actually intervene and save our agriculture. So we've got them playing two a day for 2 weeks, and while we've got the majority of our farmers that are seeding, so they're sitting on their tractors for very long hours all day, and most of them will be listening to the radio, because even though the media here is playing up that everything's back to normal now and everybody's seeding, and of course the majority of farmers are seeding, but they're not seeding anywhere near the amount of acreage as they normally do. So because they're restricted in finance, so that's the underlying problem on that, yes.
Right. And the also you mentioned there was no these decades and years, and then currently the obstruction of what you called waterproofing agriculture, meaning in a good sense to do the best you can that there's plentiful water. One of the three of you may want to say more about that in the sense of this what we're up against. If you recap some of the law applying to one of the most beautiful water projects, the Murray-Darling Basin. Would you throw that in here? Maybe, Craig, you want to say that?
Okay, yes, Marsha. I was just saying that Noel Eam was reporting about the Federal Environment Minister Burke trying to stop farmers from putting their cattle into the national parks. Well, this is the same Burke that's presided over the shutdown of Australia's major food bowl, which covers four states. The same minister, he actually ironically did the same with the what we call the alpine cattle farmers here in Victoria. The cattle were allowed into the national parks, and they chew down the weeds, and they keep the national parks much freer for fire hazards.
Oh, yeah, it's cheap,
but Tony Burke... Yes, yeah, cheap. And there's a certain lot of refertilisation capacity from cattle too, of course.
Yeah, right.
But the state government overruled the federal government in order to have the alpine farmers have their cattle back in. So what did Burke do is he introduced special federal legislation to kick them out again. I mean, this guy is a complete rabid greenie of the worst particular type. He has overseen the shutdown or the what we say the buyback of water allocations in the Murray-Darling Basin, where they intend to remove an enormous amount of water out of the Murray-Darling Basin and put it into what's called environmental flows. In other words, fill up the swamps again in order to be able to breed mosquitoes. That's their intention, is to have wetlands for birds. So they're so what's happening is that those water flows are being taken away from farmers. And we're talking about areas, Marsha, that have been farmed or taken out of the desert for 100 years. And, 100 years ago were desert and consequently, turned into valuable dry, irrigated farmland. So, I mean, this is the direction. And all of this ideology, as we've put out in our publications, is a result of what we call the British Crown's green fascist agenda. And it's the other side of the same coin as free trade, as globalization, privatization, deregulation, economic rationalism. I mean, some of your listeners may have heard the horror story that's taken place in Russia with the collapse of population there, or Ukraine under the shock therapy that was introduced in the early 90s. Well, Australia's part of the British Commonwealth. We're part of the British Empire, to use the actual term. So consequently, the British already control our banking system, you know, lock, stock and barrel. They control the economy, so they didn't have to do shock therapy like they did in Russia, because we've been suffering shock therapy for the last 40 years. It's the same thing. So, and one of the markers for this, Marsha, has just happened yesterday, that Our car, one of our car manufacturers, Ford Motor Company, after 70 years and producing the Model T Ford initially in Australia, has decided to stop car manufacturing here in Australia. And 1,100 jobs have now been put at, well, they're going to be sacked. And two, you know, one whole major town of Geelong is going to basically die because of this, and also, you know, Broadmeadows, which is part of Melbourne. You're talking about the shutdown of the machine tool sector here, and this is solely to do with British free trade again. It's not just the agricultural areas that are being suffering. And this, look, solution is what Mr. LaRouche has been proposing, and particularly recently, he's been re-emphasising, first of all, Glass-Steagall, you know, separate out the legitimate commercial banking system, protect it, and then develop credits through national banking to be able to fund large-scale infrastructure development projects. And back in 2002, we outlined for our country the equivalent of the Australian NWAPA, you know, the Australian North American Water and Power Alliance, which was a series of 18 different water projects for Australia. We have a bit of a difficulty here in Australia in that most of our water falls in the north, and you're talking meters of water, you know, not just, you know, a little bit of water, but meters, you know, 2, 3, sometimes 4 meters of water would fall every year. And there were proposals by people that, like, for example, Dr. J.J.C. Bradfield. He's the guy that built the Sydney Harbour Bridge, Sydney Harbour Bridge that people might know, you know. We call it the giant coat hanger. Well, He proposed to build the Bradfield scheme, which was to take the enormous volumes of water up in the north and turn them inland so that you'd literally be able to have permanent water streams inland, watering the inland of Australia. But he was back in the early 1920s talking about biospheric engineering, because what he was talking about is by taking those huge volumes of water and turning them inland, you would change the climate for hundreds of thousands of square kilometres to the east of those water flows, because you'd have much higher water density, water vapour density in the air, and consequently the potential for more rain. So he was talking about literally changing the climate on the east coast of Australia and bringing more rain to that area. So that's just one project. I mean, we've got other projects which involved hydroelectricity generating capacity, pump storage, things on the Clarence River that would feed the Murray-Darling Basin river system, which is the one that Burke is trying to shut down. And in West Australia you have the Ord River Stage 2 and 3. Well, they're actually going ahead with that with Chinese development. You have the huge Fitzroy River development area. The Fitzroy River is one of these huge rivers that flows just out to the sea on the west northwest coast of Australia. And there's huge areas of land to the south of that could be developed for broadacre irrigation and so forth. So Professor Lance Endersby, who we worked with very closely, who's one of the original engineers on the Snowy Mountain scheme, actually trained under the Roosevelt's
Tennessee Valley
Authority, actually, back in the 30s. He proposed that with all the different infrastructure that we could develop, like high-speed rail, high-speed shipping, we could have a food bowl to the north of us, Marshall, which would hold, would be able to support about 100 million people. Now, at the moment, we've got 23 million people and a population density of 2 people per square kilometre. You're not talking about a huge increase when you're talking about 100 million people in this country, compared to population densities in relative different parts of the world. And if we're given a chance to develop the water, develop the high-speed infrastructure like rail and even the fact that we could develop nuclear power in this country. I mean, we have the highest reserves of thorium. We don't even mine one ton. We have 300,000 metric tons of thorium. We have the second largest reserves of uranium, yet we don't have a nuclear industry. These sorts of projects, combined with water projects, combined with actual support for agriculture, I think people could get a picture of just how extremely wealthy this country actually is. But we're being made into slaves and paupers because of this damn British Empire. And I don't think Mr. LaRouche, for those people who listen to Mr. LaRouche, ever exaggerates about how destructive this British Empire is. And I think I had the opportunity of going to Antietam and so forth when I was last in the United States to see the 23,000 people that were mortally wounded and killed in that one battle. And you think that's the actual ugly face of the British-backed Confederacy and the British sort of operations that the America itself has had to fight. So this is not an abstract discussion about the British Empire. I mean, we've been literally, our food supply has literally been taken off the table by the British.
Right. And what you were describing, what Gene, you were describing in Western Australia, where you implied in the past there were more farmers, more growing communities, more diversity of production, pigs, and probably other certain amount of other crops. You in the release you put out earlier in May about this crisis, you said that 20 years ago, 1991, in Australia as a whole, there were 120,000 farmers. That was down from 204,000 in 1953, and now it's down to 40,000. Is that right across all of Australia?
Yes, that's correct, and that's precisely what's happening. So I was just going to add on to what Craig was developing, this idea with the water projects, because, of course, that's what, you know, Mr. LaRouche has been saying. This is the most important aspect, is to actually create a true economic recovery, because as a result of losing all your manufacturing and agricultural industries, which is why we have this depopulation going on, and in the seat of O'Connor, it also covers a huge amount of the mining part of Australia, and, of course, the most famous of all, which is actually Kalgoorlie. Now, Kalgoorlie is this city of about 22,000 people, but it's just a big hole in the ground, and it's ironic to think that this is probably the wealthiest square mile on the planet, because it's a gold mine. It's mainly gold mining there. And today, after 200 years, you've got this desperate town that has nothing. It has one pipeline for water, a couple of roads going into it, one very antique railway line, and the population has nothing. It's just a culture of gambling, pubs, and there's nothing there. So, you know, potentially for WA, as Craig was saying with the Fitzroy River, because this river is massive. It's the second biggest flowing river on the planet when it's in flood. And potentially we could drought-proof not just Western Australia but also South Australia, because if, you know, the infrastructure was built to create, like, development corridors, say, all the way from the north part of the state down to the south, you know, it could be brought down to Kalgoorlie. And then, you know, with a high-speed rail system, you could actually turn Kalgoorlie to become an industrial hub for Western Australia, which we hardly have anymore, because we're not manufacturing anything. We're just digging up all our very valuable minerals and selling them off for virtually nothing to China and elsewhere. So, you know, we need to be building the steel mills and manufacturing everything that we used to do in this country, because just south of Kalgoorlie is a major port, Esperance, and, you know, and we can have many other industries. There's huge brown coal deposits at Esperance as well, which could all be developed into making textiles or and petrochemical industries as well, because also around Kalgoorlie you have all the other minerals as well. There's masses of copper and nickel and all the things that you need for making modern metals today. So that's one way of actually reversing this complete slide of the population into the major cities, or we only have one major city in WA because we are a very sparsely populated state. But that's the sort of thing that's required to actually reverse this collapse, is to have the population become excited about the potential that can actually be done. Because, you know, Kalgoorlie should become should have universities. It should become the centre of all the research to do with generating whole new industries, the Kimberleys, the more tropical areas, we should have, and even right down in the outback, you know, the soil in Western Australia is phenomenal. And as land centres be designed, you could have mass irrigation. And that's the other problem we've had, as you said, with the takedown of all the, you know, there's no mixed farming left in WA at all now, you know, because the dairy farmers are virtually gone. The fruit and vegetable growers are virtually gone. The pig industry is actually gone. So therefore, we've gone to this direction of monocultures as well, which is actually not very good for the soils. And instead of, you know, our farmers desperately having to try and plant every square metre of their soils with you know, crops like canola and wheat, you know, they could actually be irrigating, you know, sections of their farms and becoming far more intensive and going back to actually having, you know, running livestock as well, because that needs to happen to actually bring back the fertility in the soil. And also the other great problem that's also happened, which has created the collapse, is the takedown of our meat abattoir facilities, because, you know, we've lost about 80% of our abattoirs, and the three major ones that are export accredited have just been taken up by foreign interests. So we no longer actually have the ability to supply meat for our domestic market anymore. It's been taken out of our hands because we don't have control of the abattoirs, which, of course, now the meat that has been processed has been exported. So it's the same British doctrine of free trade, isn't it? This is very, very...
Jean, I was just going to add on that there's a study that's just been released by Edith Cowan University in Western Australia that has announced now that one-third of all of the pastoral properties in Western Australia, these, you know, that used to be family-owned grazing operations, are no longer owned by family farmers, but they're in the hands of mining companies, Aboriginal groups, and conservation organisations, and that the single largest leaseholder of land in Western Australia now are the mining companies. So they're virtually just taking over all of this productive land. They may run a few head of cattle on it, but there's no serious enterprise, you know, food production enterprise going on in those areas. And you just see the counterposition of what Jean was describing as the potential for increasing the energy flux density and the productivity of the land. It's been headed in exactly the opposite direction, just closing it down, turning it into wildlife preserves and indigenous playgrounds, if you like, and the mining companies just sit on it with the prospect of one day, you know, potentially mining it but doing nothing productive with it. And it's, you know, this is what strikes you is there's no way that you can look at what's happening universally across the entire country without concluding that this is a top-down, deliberate, conscious policy of food reduction, depopulation, and genocide. There's no other conclusion that you can draw. But that's a, even for many of our farmers who are on the receiving end of this crisis, and the consumers who are paying the price for that kind of policy, it's still a very difficult challenge to convince them that anybody, you know, that there could be such a an agenda. So that's part of our political challenge, and the political fight is to really go behind the scenes, you know, behind what the symptoms of the crisis, to get people to think much more deeply about, the cause of this, first of all, and then once people start to look at the cause, then they're empowered to do something about it. And so we've got quite a challenge on our hands in that respect.
Yes, it's this is very dramatic because
actually the other aspect
your country being so so large and impressive with hardly anyone there, if you're thinking about it from a distance, it just seems insane to talk about locking anything up at all. Just to throw in one, in a very speeded up way, this same process of population of the farm rural areas being depopulated is happening here to the extreme in North America. For example, New Mexico, where the upper reaches of the Rio Grande River, called the Rio Bravo in Mexico, people are leaving counties. In western Kansas, they're leaving counties. One county, the state may have 50 or 100 counties. There's maybe only 500 in one of them because of the combination of the financial markets, monetarist speculation crash, and the physical economic conditions, the lack of water, or your well has gone so deep that you might only be bringing up lots of sand with the water that you do get, and it's ruining your machinery. But Senator Harkin in Iowa, which has beautiful soils, it's between two rivers, the Mississippi and the Missouri, and it's the most cultivated area of the state in the country. That is, most of its land is under the plow, metaphorically. 66 out of 100 counties in Senator Harkin's state are losing population. They have fewer people than years ago, and that's not just because, gee, how are you going to keep them down on the farm? They can all go to Des Moines. It's just depopulation, just in the way you're saying, Gene, losing services, churches, schools, no stores, no hardware store. And that's, I'm just throwing this in because of what you said about top-down in Australia, top-down and worldwide, right?
Definitely. And that's the conclusion, I think, that at long last, even some of our, long-suffering farmers and other citizens are starting to draw, with help from us, of course, that this has to be a conscious top-down policy, because there's no rational justification for the destruction of industry, the destruction of communities. Otherwise, it's that's a hard thing for most people to come to terms with.
In the final 7 minutes, please throw in anything you want. We could to bring out. Were you saying something, Craig?
No, I just thought I'd throw it back to Jean because she was trying to say something a minute ago, got cut off. But
I was just going to say the other aspect which Craig touched on, because he actually did mention that the Ord River development, which is the other big river in the top of Western Australia, was Ord River scheme. The Ord River Dam was built back in the 1950s. And the second stage of that project actually has been built, which is good. But the problem is, it's not being used to grow food. And basically, what's happened is they've planted half of it to sandalwood trees, which are just useless for humanity anyway. And the second stage of that is also being because it's normally got a huge cane sugar growing area, and quite ironically, about 5-6 years ago, the Australian local cane producers up there were going bankrupt and they were losing their processing mill, and they asked the state government to put in $300 million, and of course the Premier Barnett refused to do that, so the industry went bankrupt, and now it's just been revamped under the Chinese, and guess who's helping fund the reconstruction or the take up of the new mill, which of course is the government. So they're happy to give funding to foreigners. But the other aspect too, which has happened, is under this sort of a de facto green policy driven by forms of tax evasion, is planting of the southwest to trees. Also, we've had this industry called the blue gum plantations, which actually now takes up 400,000 square hectares of, which actually are the traditionally the other food bowls. So all your high rainfall areas that actually go around the coastline, which is where normally it's all fruit, veggie growing, dairy, meat producing, all the way from sort of down around the southwest coast in for about, say, 100 kilometres because blue gums require a reasonable rainfall. So the higher rainfalls of the southwest have been planted by these terrible trees which actually just rob the soil and lock up all this area. And that has also contributed to the shutdown of many, many communities and, of course, the ongoing businesses as well. So you've got this whole attack now where it doesn't matter where you are in the state, it's all been, you know, shut down in the name of some green policy, and food production's been completely sacrificed. So the writing's on the wall, and we need the population to actually start to realise, as Nolene said, that there's a bigger agenda going on here to shut down food production, not just here but worldwide, as part of the British monarchy's effort to reduce the world's population down to less than a billion people.
We just, Marsha, I'll just jump in here and just let you know that this last weekend, just gone, we just had a conference here in Melbourne, which is our largest conference ever as part of our organisation. And the subject was Toward a Nobler Manhood and a Public Credit System. Some of your listeners might remember a couple of weeks back when I was in the US with a couple of our collaborators, Ben and Richard. They recited poetry from Charles Harper on your show. And, that was that. We just had that conference celebrating our national poet's work down here as a Republican poet. But also we went through in detail the history of our national bank, the Commonwealth Bank, and the need for public credit. And, I mean, this terrible genocide that's being perpetrated on Australia is and will find a resistance within the population, but not at the level of protest groups simply standing up and protesting, but actually understanding this question of the nature of man, something that the LaRouche organisation stands for in this concept of what we call imago vivi Dei, man created in the image of God, that we have creative abilities that separate us out from just simply being mere animals, which is how the greenies want to treat us. Now, we have to, as our mission down here, you know, as we've taken up, we have to ennoble more and more of our Australian people to get up off their hind legs, as Lynn says, and actually fight, because it doesn't take very many people to create the sort of revolution that's going on. And I think our conference in the last weekend acted as a catalyst towards, and will continue to act as a catalyst towards this resistance against these terrible, terrible policies, specifically as we go forward into a federal election where we could have, I don't even know how many candidates yet. It could be 50, 70, 80. Who knows how many candidates will be standing for the federal election, all standing on one platform with one voice, and that is Glass-Steagall. We need it in Australia, but we need it internationally. A national bank, which we've had in the past here in Australia, to create enormous amounts of credit. And then let's go with developing our country with large-scale water projects, break the tyranny of distance with high-speed rail. Let's separate shorten the distance between continents with high-speed shipping, and so on and so forth. It's as the British keep trying to push us further and further into genocide, the more and more the reaction is coming that we actually have to harness, but direct it in a way that we don't just end up with anarchy and tons of protest groups.
Well, that's a great wrap-up. I'm afraid we've run out of time, but I want to have the final Gene Robinson there again to recap, is speaking with us from Western Australia, where you're running for federal office. And I certainly think you are an international voice of what must be done to lead the way out of this trap, from, as it's been described, this top-down depopulation food destruction policy. Do you want to say anything in closing?
Yes, I'd just like to say that what we're going to do is we're going to keep doing what we're doing, because there is a recognition from the population that there's something rotten in Denmark. They might not actually know what it is yet. But basically, yeah, it's very much, we're working very hard on the Glass-Steagall issue here in Australia. And although we do realise, of course, that all depends on the United States there, because if the Glass-Steagall Act is actually passed in the United States, that'll be have phenomenal ramifications for the rest of the world, and particularly Australia, because without that actually being implemented, we're not going to be able to actually do what's required financially in this country to turn it around. But there's huge potential because Australia has a great heritage of Republican ideals, which is what our conference last weekend was all about. We were founded on by some very patriotic Irish and Scottish people as well. So that's a tradition that we've got to bring forth in our country to realise, as Craig said, that we are created in the image of the Creator, and that means that we have a system of government of the people, for the people, by the people. And that's what we want to convey in our campaigns, to get people to act like human beings and start fighting and creating a future for their children, which can be done. You know, we need to, the Glass-Steagall, recreate the national banking system, public credit, and let's start building a true economic recovery, because without building masses of infrastructure projects at this period of the crisis, we're not going to make it. We're going to have a horrific consequences if we don't carry out these policies. And that's what we all need to do and all need to fight for. So it's been good to talk to you today, Marcia.
Oh, thank you very much, Jean Robinson, for being on. And also thanks, Nolene and Craig Isherwood there in Melbourne, Jean out in Western Australia. So this will conclude our LaRue Show for today. We taped it May 23rd, 2013, but you'll be hearing it at the regular time. This is Marcia Mary Baker. Thank you all for listening, and good luck, Jean. We'll be back together again.
Thanks, Marcia.
Yep.
Thank you all.